Compliance is a profession where people work tirelessly to make the world a better place. And there are hundreds of amazing and inspiring women who have helped the field develop into what it is today. Great Women in Compliance is part of the Compliance Podcast Network as they talk with women in compliance who are making a difference.
Hi, and welcome to the Great Women in Compliance podcast hosted by Hema Lomax and me, Lisa Fine. We are sponsored by Corporate Compliance Insight and the Compliance Podcast Network. One of the themes that I keep coming back to is women in leadership, whether as a chief ethics and compliance officer, in corporate functions, or in a business. Today's guest is a leader in all of these areas and throughout her career. Maria Dowdy is the president and CEO of the Chicago Network, which is an organization for influential and successful women leaders in Chicago to empower women leaders and to help people build their careers in many different areas. Before this, she was the director of public policy and regulatory examination and corporate counsel for Allstate Insurance Company. That's a mouthful for me. And she has worked in law and in regulatory compliance. So with that, Maria, thank you so much for being here. Before we get to the current role and the Chicago Network, can you tell us about more about your background and how you got to where you are?
Yeah, so Lisa, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm really excited to have this conversation with you. And I feel like every time we talk, we tend to end up talking about new topics for us to explore. But to give you a little bit about my background, I'm the daughter of Italian immigrants who has a very strong work ethic. I love fostering collaboration, and I really do have a profound commitment to serving others. And I know that I'm sitting in the seat that I am today because I had mentors and coaches and teachers who believed and invested in me. So my background is important to know how I ended up in law and compliance, so to speak, is that I spoke little English until I went to kindergarten. And my parents are two of the smartest people I know, but they had little formal education. So for me and for them, education really was the key to all kinds of opportunities. So when I finally started to speak more proficiently, I learned that I could use my voice to really advocate for others and be a force for good. So it was clear at that point that being a lawyer was the obvious path. And I have had a really wonderful career in law at law firms, as well as the corporate sector. Like you mentioned, focusing in highly regulated industries, primarily insurance and financial services. And then in early 2020, I left the corporate sector and joined the nonprofit sector. And in February 2020, I signed my contract with an April 2020 start date as the CEO of the Chicago Network. And we could have an entire podcast about what you should or should not do during a global pandemic in terms of your massive career moves. But it has been an incredible journey. And I am absolutely, completely convinced that my compliance experience, the regulatory experience that I had coming out of my corporate world really helped me propel the organization to where it stands right now. And during a global pandemic, governances and compliance and all those things are critically important to the sustainability and financial success and of an organization. So
it's quite a time to be doing that. You didn't really know over those 8 weeks how it would change for your start date. But with that, will you tell us a little bit about the Chicago Network, what it is, and why you were so excited about it and remains excited?
Yeah. The Chicago Network is the premier organization for women senior executive leaders in Chicagoland. We were founded in 1979 by nine women senior executives who, as they continued to climb the corporate ladder, they found it was very lonely at the top. And they found each other in professional fellowship. And then they realized that their professional fellowship extended to their professional lives. And the network was born. They then realized that they had this incredibly meaningful, powerful allyship, and they wanted to extend it out to other women. And here's what was the genius of this in 1979. These women recognized that they needed to weave together a very diverse group of women. And instead of just focusing on the corporate sector, they opened it up to 11 different sectors of our city. So they sent out personal invitations to 100 plus women in Chicagoland who are sitting in that C-suite top, that CEO spot, and invited them to be part of this organization. And that's how the network was founded. And we have 500 plus members now. They are really, truly the most influential women across the 11 sectors of our city. So I have Fortune 50 CEOs. I have 12 university presidents. I have entrepreneurs in every sector that you can imagine. I have astrophysicists, artists, judges, senators, heads of medical systems. I could go on and on. I have this beautiful tapestry of diverse women who are there. Really, primary purpose is empowering women to lead. Everything we do is through that lens. And we work on dismantling barriers. We help fast track women in key sectors. A lot of the work we do is about community, fostering alliances to really take action in fostering gender equity, which is our vision, gender equity for all women of all colors everywhere. But most importantly, I think the beauty about the organization is that we truly focus on supporting each other, both professionally and personally. And I have really, the reason why there's this, I sound so excited is because I know of no other organization like this. As lawyers, there are law groups that we could be part of, and then there's certain industry sectors you can be part of. But this group is so unique because it is so diverse. And the beauty of it is it's an invitation-only organization. So there's a real focus on making sure the peers are you're with your peers. And when you're with your peers, you have nothing to prove to anyone. There's this deep sense of authenticity and vulnerability that I really, truly have seen in no or another organization. And it's about helping each other. And when we know when women help each other, there's no stopping, right? And that it is quite a beautiful thing. You wrote about this in your book, when you get to the top, send the elevator back down. That's what this group does. And it's a beautiful group to be part of.
That's so funny because I was thinking about two things as you said that. One was about that idea of being able to support others. And the other part that just reminded me, which is very different, was that the beginning of this podcast came from when we were talking one night about all the other compliance podcasts. There were about four at the time and they were all by men. And we said, why aren't there any hosted by women? And then the next day, our supporter said, let's do it. And here we are. So that is really great. Now, one thing that I'm going to change the topic a little bit, both for you and for some of the other, for others too, that you've talked about, is that you talked a lot about intellectual agility. And it seems to me that would be something that would come up even more with so many different women in different places, in different roles as in the Chicago Network. But for you, what do you see that as? And how can we in ethics and compliance, women in there, be agile in that?
Thank you so much for raising this topic. I really do believe intellectual agility is a differentiator. And I first heard of this term. I heard a Fortune 500 female CEO use it, and it really stuck with me. And I know people have talked about it in different ways. And it's interesting because agility, just the term agility, is, I think, a little bit different from intellectual agility. And I think they're both incredibly important characteristics in leadership and particularly in compliance. But for me, I see intellectual agility as really the ability to adapt quickly, evaluating, learning, and thinking critically in various situations. And in my case, I had the privilege of working in multiple roles and different areas throughout my corporate career. And in some cases, I was thrown into roles that were completely new to me. And it really forced me to adapt. And I had to be really flexible and a willingness to learn. For me, it really comes down to being a continuous learner and being very interested in hearing, understanding different viewpoints. And in compliance, particularly now, when you think about what companies are facing and compliance experts and counselors are facing, things are being thrown at them from every different area. They have to consider different areas, different aspects of situations and scenarios, being able to cognitively separate things out and being able to really adapt and focus in ways that I think in the past they didn't have to do. So I really do believe that it is a differentiator and a way for people to excel in different types of leadership roles. I do believe that it is something you can build and learn. It's not, people think you have to have it or just part as part of your DNA. And I think there are aspects of it that I think are important that are a little bit more, people are more comfortable with, but I do believe that people can develop this sense of intellectual agility. And I referenced it about being a continuous learner is the first thing I would look to is staying curious, actively seeking new information. I think joining LinkedIn communities on focusing on ethics and compliance, listening to podcasts, connecting with others in the space. I also think we just talked about this, seeking opportunities to sit on panels. And we talked about that, the Ethics and Compliance Conference in Texas. It's a way to build community, but also you learn so much and you open up your scope, so to speak, to be able to hear what's happening around you. And as a compliance expert, I think that's really important. You cannot live in a cocoon and expect to really do a really excellent job at counseling or whatever you're assessing if you really don't keep yourself open. I think another thing that would be helpful for folks is to, I'll say, like focus and work, hone in on your critical thinking skills. Now, I was a high school debater. So for me, this has now become part of my DNA. But I think practice analyzing information objectively, considering different perspectives, questioning assumptions, all this will, I think, help you continue to build this sense of intellectual agility. And as a compliance expert, that's what we should be doing. Right. You should be always analyzing information objectively. You should be taking different perspectives into consideration. And you should always be questioning assumptions because it really is part of how we function. I think the other thing I would say is being adaptable. And this is hard for some people, but embracing change and being open to new ideas really will help as you're dealing with evolving situations. I've been on a number of calls recently where there's a lot of conversation now about what's happening both nationally and globally and the impact of what's happening externally that compliance experts are going to have to be addressing depending on some of the shifts that are going to happen. And I think and being adaptable is going to be a key component in really doing a really good job as a compliance expert. I'll keep going, Lisa. You can interrupt me.
I was actually going to interrupt you for a second right now. So your timing was perfect. I think all of those, because talking about those things makes me think from ethics and compliance perspective that we need to be really learning about our businesses and being intellectually curious with what other people are doing so that we can be effective internally. And then it also made me think a bit about something new I was going to ask about is the intellectual ability and to deal with change. It's really important for leaders and leadership style. And as women, I think we often really try to connect. And I think it's one of the best things that we do. And you've spoken about leading with empathy. So I have a question personally and professionally about that, because I always want to be empathetic and I want to be open to people. But there's also some question of personal boundaries. And me as a proud member of Gen X versus Gen Y, what I consider oversharing or sharing. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately. So how do we do that as women and as leaders to both remain effective and maintain what are appropriate boundaries and conversation in a way that we feel comfortable?
Yeah, I think supporting others is absolutely critical. And empathy and leadership, it's really interesting because I think many people want to be empathetic leaders and some people think that they're empathetic leaders, but I would recommend that if you haven't done a 360 in a while, make sure that empathy is part of the 360 assessment. You may be a little bit shocked and surprised at the result because it really, empathy is very hard. And being an empathetic leader and kind of drawing those lines is even tougher because being an empathetic leader means you're putting yourself in the shoes of the other. And I, for me, that's really hard because part of it is just listening to what someone's saying. And for me, I'm a problem solver, and I think compliance people are generally problem solvers, that it's very hard not to step in and want to fix the problem as opposed to just sit back and really just listen to what somebody is saying. For me, I think in terms of the support for women, I see it in two different paths. And let me explain what I mean by that. So I think about just the way the Chicago Network works. It's about pushing top down and bottom up. And the top down really is about what women can do in trying to get more opportunities to serve on for-profit boards. Because we know that women in the C-suite, or people in the C-suite, leaders in the C-suite, the board of directors really are the ones that help determine who's sitting in that space. So for me, it's figuring out how you can get more women to be sitting on for-profit boards so that you see more diversity in the C-suite. And that's and how we go about doing that is being cheerleaders for each other, supporting each other both professionally and personally, being clear about what you're asking of someone. So if you have someone that you want to support or you want them to support you, it's about asking them how you can support them. What can you do to help them? And then in turn, what honestly they can do to help you. And so for me, it's about working with each other is to make sure that we see some change on for-profit boards. And I really do believe that can be done by relationships, by sharing. The network has a database called womenlead.io. We created it. It's completely created in-house. And what we do is anybody, it's open to the public. People can go, you're looking for someone to serve on a for-profit board. You can get onto the website and just do we've got a 500 tag search. So you can put any type of, any words you want in there, the kind of characteristic skills that you're looking for. And then the database will produce the women that fit those requirements. And then you can see their profiles, and it's a great way to support getting some more diversity within boards. Equally, as important as it is to support from the top down, it really is also about what it looks like, the pipeline going into the C-suite looks like. And so it's just as important to help that next generation of women leaders to be able to step into those spaces. And I think that, again, everybody talks about mentorship, it's sponsorship, but it's also having really difficult conversations with women about opportunity areas, and those women being receptive to hearing where they can plug into it. In the Chicago Network, we started a program called Launchpad, and it's our Women's Leadership Summit. It's completely accessible to anybody, but the program really is focused on women in the VP and director positions. And when we talk about increasing the number of women in the C-suite, it's about cultivating that pipeline for succession. And it's about building community, making sure that the women have good networks to support each other within, just not in their industry, but outside of their industry. And I think it's having women, particularly, we know that to get into a CEO role, it's really important for somebody to have to own a P&L. And a lot of women who have aspirations to being in that space are never really told, by the way, you should own a P&L if you want to be the CEO of an organization. And I think that's a really profound message for women to hear, because sometimes that means they have to take a lateral or they have to take a step down to get the experience that will help them get into that C-suite role. So I think it's really hard for women who are sitting in the C-suite, particularly in the CEO role, to make themselves what we'll call vulnerable to others within the group, because there is this sense of controlled vulnerability when you're sitting in that role. And so I hear what you're saying, and I think it'd be an interesting to hear like other women, how they go about doing that, because it's really not easy. It is not easy.
Sometimes it's just not intuitive either. But I also think it has a lot to do with, you also have to be yourself and be genuine to who you are. I had a leader once earlier in my career who I decided I would never be, because her view was always like, put the face on and everything is okay. And I'm always going to say the company line. I had trouble trusting that because it was not genuine. So it's an interest. So I've always tried to incorporate some of the lessons learned from that experience And she was a lovely person. And one day she decided to drop all the boundaries. And it was slightly terrifying because it was so unexpected. But with that said, it is something I think about regularly. And how do I do that and, you know, be true to myself while also growing a leadership presence in a role? And I guess with that, it's a little wider than just for women. But and one of the things I loved when I looked at more about the Chicago Network is the focus that you have on gender equity that's larger than just talking about women as women. And it's women of all colors and different age, but particularly the diversity. And what can we do as women to better support each other and promote diversity, not just for women, but for women of different colors, of color or other issues?
I think stepping into, and it's not just mentorship, right? You could have interactions with women, and it could be a one-off interaction, but you're really intentional about the conversation that you have with that individual. I had a really interesting conversation with a young woman who saw herself literally in this little tunnel. And I stepped back and looked at her and I said, okay, you need to step back. You really need to step back and you have to look at the experience that you've had. This may be the job you've had and the title you had, but you have to look at what are the skills that you brought to this job? What are the skills you learned in that job? And then how do you open yourself up to realizing that you're not defined by this title? You're not defined by the fact you're just a lawyer. And that, I think, helping people see, and this comes with experience and wisdom and age, you realize I'm not going to let a title define me. I'm not going to let my gender define me or you fill in the blank define me. You're going to really, and I think it's having other people see things in you and point them out that are going to help that next generation really open themselves up to doing something different. One of the roles I took at Allstate, when the general counsel brought me in and she said, I really want you to take on this role. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. She said, no, this is going to be a really good role for you. And I said, let me think about it. I went back, I came back and I said, I really thought about it. Thanks so much, but I don't think so. And she looked at me and she said, I'm not asking. Like this is, and it's funny because she said it tongue in cheek, I'm not asking, but she articulated to me very clearly the skills that I had, the things that she saw in me that would literally make me ideal and perfect for this role. And I did not, at the time she did that, I didn't see what she was talking about. And that was my favorite role. I excelled, everything just blew up after that role because she saw something in me. So to answer your question, it's take the time to have conversations. It's about communication. It's about transparency. It's about having very courageous conversations, but sometimes very difficult conversations. But I think the more honest we are with ourselves, the more honest we are with other people that we are working with, and honest, and of course, being a cheerleader, I think the two of us are pretty positive, optimistic people. That optimism and that will definitely come out as we're talking to people, but it really is about letting people know that you're here to support, that you have their back. It's that genuineness that I think comes out when you really truly open yourself up to having a more candid, open conversation that I think could make differences in people's lives.
I think that's a fabulous example, especially for helping to promote and to give people the confidence to try to move forward, because if they know that someone's going to be in their corner, it makes it a lot easier to try to take that leap, or in your case, have no choice in that particular role. The other part of it that I think that is the idea that from ethics and compliance, and particularly from a risk and compliance standpoint, when people think about diversity, you think, if you look around the table and all men, all white men, all white, you don't have actually, you're only maybe having two or three viewpoints looking at what your key issues can be. And that's the same with for leadership. If your table, everyone, you want them all to be exactly the same, that's not going to be representative or a way to look at issues critically or move forward. So I think that's really important for women. And it looks like something you all promote.
Yeah. I mean, you hit it straight on. It is, we need to avoid the groupthink. And there's a lot being talked about now about this push away from ESG and DEI and this sense of diversity. But the Wall Street Journal had a really interesting article, I think it was on Monday, yesterday, where it talked about, okay, let's stop giving it a name. The reality of it is that the diversity in any sense will usually create success. It gives you different viewpoints. There's value. There's clear value in having diverse voices at the table. And diversity can be gender and race and diversity of thought. You have all that. But it is basic. It is empirical that when you have a diverse group solving a problem or in a corporation or a board, whatever, you will have success because you don't have that groupthink. You are thinking about things differently. On the risk side, you're anticipating risks that are definitely unexpected and maybe things that if you have the same people thinking the same way, who have the same background, they're just not going to see the things that are coming, the curveballs that are coming ahead, and they can't anticipate them. Certainly from a compliance standpoint, I think it's absolutely essential. And I think the other thing I would say is people in compliance, don't let it define you in terms of your skill set, because ethics and compliance is so broad and can be, it's essential in every single industry, in every single organization. I don't care if you're for-profit or nonprofit, startup, you name it, you must have an ethics and compliance focus to be able to become successful, profitable, whatever your end goal is, it's essential. And so the skill set of someone who's sitting with that expertise is much broader than this very narrow focus that I think sometimes people think about as compliance experts. There are so many other skills. And when you're sitting in roles like you are, it's important to let other people, particularly younger people who are coming into the profession, understand that you are thinking critically. You are being agile. You have to be intellectually agile. You have to have empathy as you're dealing with some of these changes. You have to be willing to be nimble and flexible because you are going to be jumping hoops at times that you didn't anticipate and expect. But I think those are the things that I think we can all do to help this next generation of leaders come up, and particularly, obviously, the Chicago Network's focused on women leaders. But we can all step in. Every conversation, every opportunity, we should seize it.
And what the Chicago Network is doing for women, you have done in this conversation for all of us. And I really thank you for taking the time with me and talking about all of these issues. I can't wait to get to meet you at some point in person, and appreciate it. And on behalf of me and Hema and the Compliance Podcast Network, thank you so much for joining me, and everybody have a great day.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Great Women in Compliance. We hope you'll join us in honoring the great women in the compliance field by subscribing to this podcast and leaving a review.